You are listening to the Riverfront Church Podcast, a place to explore faith, history, ideals, and more.
I'm Pastor Emma.
And I'm Pastor Edwin. And welcome to the Riverfront 505 Podcast, where we're talking about all sorts of things today. Pastor Emma, what are we talking about?
So today, I wanted to spend some time having those conversations that you have with your friends, sometimes late at night, sometimes when you kind of run out of the things to say at the dinner table, throwing out one of those big questions: what is inspiring you right now?
Wow, what is inspiring me right now? Gosh. Well, first off, it's the weather's been inspiring me. I'm a person who loves lots of sun and warm weather, and going for walks and festivals and spending time with friends, it's just kind of an excuse to be like, you know what, it's too hot, let's go do this instead. That really inspires me, spending time with people, kind of people's usual routine being interrupted. Mm-hmm. I just think, I almost feel like our faith kind of helps us do that. Like, yeah, there's ritual things that you do that are routine, but then there's suddenly you read this passage, or Jesus does something in the gospel, or, you know, whatever, and it's so challenging. And so similarly, that's what I think about when it snows, when it rains, and when it's summer. It's just sort of a break in our usual day-to-day. So that's pretty inspiring. Mm. What about you?
What about me? What is inspiring me right now is, I think it's those little moments of community that sort of happen on accident. Those moments where somebody is vulnerable and is sharing part of their story in a way that's always unexpected, in a way that encounters God. I had a really cool experience a couple weeks ago. I was hanging out with some of my friends, and one of my friends turns to me kind of out of the blue and said, hey, will you pray with me? And it was not in church. This is not a person that I know that goes to church. This is a person that, because of the fact that they have transitioned, has not been prayed over in a very long time. Mm. And so it was one of those powerful moments to use their correct name, to use their correct pronouns, and to pray with them in this moment that was just really real and raw and authentic and really wonderful. And it wasn't a long prayer. It was just like, hey, God, be with this person. Love them, care for them, give them strength. And that was pretty much it. But they hadn't had anybody use the name that they preferred to go by and the pronouns they preferred to go by, because the church had told them, you're either what you were before, or we can't pray with you because we don't understand this. So it was a really lovely, really beautiful sort of moment.
That is beautiful. Wow, that's far more faith-filled than mine was. Although, in my defense, mine's about enjoying God's creation.
Okay.
But yes, that was a powerful, powerful moment. I think the other thing inspiring me is I'm about to go on a trip to Spain. By the time this podcast is released, no idea how the timeline's going to work, but I love heading to Spain. I love traveling to Spain. I've had an opportunity to backpack in Spain. I did it for about 3 weeks during seminary.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually very much connected to my journey of faith. I've always been a big, I love, and I'm so sorry if people listening to this don't or have problems with, but I really love Ernest Hemingway. And I always had just a connection with him in high school. And he writes a lot about Spain. So I've read a lot of his books, you know, close to completion. And I just kind of, when I've gone to Spain, I've kind of gone to some of the areas he talks about or that he himself frequented. Then there's also just the really fascinating history of Spain. You know, Spain was like sort of the first modern empire, and it truly, you know, the sun did not set on the Spanish Empire. And, you know, sort of its connection to the Americas. And, you know, my family is from Guatemala. So Spain features, you know, prominently in that history, for good and for ill.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just the work of missions, just the birth of a lot of the religious orders actually came out of Spain. So they were really fervent with their faith.
Mm-hmm.
And it has shaped their history. And then, of course, you get the birth of pirates, which Delaware has an interesting connection to with pirates. Pirates helped sort of get Delaware. I mean, in a sense, it's independence, right? You could argue. So pirates are a response to the Spanish Empire, getting all this gold and traveling, and also Spanish mismanagement. But then there's also just Spanish language. So mm-hmm. Spanish language is spoken about by about 600, maybe nearly 700 million people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of a native language, it's the second most spoken native language in the world. That's like quite the influence.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've seen Modern Family, or you've seen, what are the name of these shows? You know, like the Spanish soap opera shows,
okay.
Or shows that have been influenced by the Spanish soap opera. Even The Simpsons have featured Spanish soap operas. You know, Mexican and Spanish, you know, and Latin American music have absolutely shaped our culture in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just a lot of richness there. But Spain itself is so rich culturally as well. It was a Muslim caliphate invaded Spain and took it over for hundreds of years. I mean, I think it was like, I don't know, year 712 or something, and lasted until, you know, like almost 700 years. I mean, it truly was. And during that time, there's the there's a response from the Holy Roman Empire, and there's people trying to reclaim Spain, and then there's the Christian kings and this whole thing. But for a long time in Cordoba, for instance, Cordoba was the largest mosque in the world at that time. And Cordoba was the place where Jews, Muslims, and Christians were studying the same texts together in the same spaces.
Right.
Scholars were discussing all sorts of things about their faith, and that's honestly how, I believe, someone correct me on this, but when Europe loses Aristotle and a lot of the philosophers, we definitely get it through the Muslims who had translated it into Arabic.
Right.
But I'm trying to remember if the entry point was through Spain. So it was through Spanish scholars that we get Aristotle, and the church specifically gets Aristotle.
Uh-huh.
And this is an interesting moment in history where the Muslims were like, great, cool, Aristotle has some interesting things to say. And the Jewish community were like, great, Aristotle has some interesting things to say. And the church at the time, which was predominantly Catholic, the Pope was like, not only does Aristotle have something interesting to say, I'm going to require that it be read in the universities.
Mm.
So when you get, you know, monasteries that then become universities as early as, you know, 1100, if not before, they are studying Aristotle by requirement. I mean, they're required to be acquainted with Aristotle. This has huge effect on Catholic understanding of virtue ethics. It's based off of Aristotle. It has a huge effect to this day on the difference between works righteousness and not works righteousness. Like, right, you have to earn your place. Well, that has to do with Aristotle's virtue ethics.
Mm-hmm.
So you can seriously trace it and go, because of the Muslims, we're discussing virtue ethics in terms of the Reformed tradition that's a direct response to virtue ethics and sort of saying, nope, you know, salvation's outside of you and, you know, this type of thing. And where the Catholics are like, no, you've got to do something. You are cooperant in the work of salvation. And that Methodists, for instance, or Arminians also agree with. So anyway, long little history lesson, but you can tell why I'm fascinated by Spain, because it features prominently in world history to this day. And the last thing I'll say is Franco. If you haven't heard of Franco, he's a dictator. You know, you could look at it as, you know, the time before World War II. And he is a controversial figure in Spain. He's not as controversial in the world because most of the world just sees him as a dictator. Nothing controversial about that. But in Spain, there are those who kind of say, well, he kept us out of World War II. He organized the country, and he kept us stable in a time where a bunch of countries were failing. So people want to honor him. So there's some would accuse those people of historical revisionism. But Franco was a brutal dictator, and he killed many people, including, I'm trying to think of the famous poet. Well, let's just say several artists were killed by Franco's regime.
Mm-hmm.
And this part of the story is actually featured in the movie Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh.
There's a little bit of the story of the Spanish Civil War, which is somewhat unfair because it's really the government's war against people. Like, is that technically a civil war? I don't know. But Ernest Hemingway, in fact, features because he participated in the Spanish Civil War. Homage to Catalonia by George Orwell features prominently in the story of the Spanish Civil War,
mm-hmm.
And just the loyalists. So there are Americans involved in this story. So again, it's like Spain is just remarkable. The first president of the Irish Republic, it was Spanish.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just kind of funky. It's just like a really funky history. So I'm clearly fascinated by it.
Right.
And the reason I mentioned Franco, though, is because it really went to a modern-ish era.
Mm-hmm.
And it skipped, so almost pre-modern, like post-Enlightenment, pre-modern, and then it skips and it jumps all the way to post-modern. So when you go to Spain, I think it's just so unique in the sense that you go there and it's just so ancient.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really is. Like, having gone to Rome and then having gone to Madrid, Rome does not compare, in my opinion.
Mm.
It looks like Madrid is the center of the empire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what it looks like. It's just lavish and huge and beautiful. I mean, it's amazing. But you can tell that it is a place of contradictions.
Mm, okay.
You know, it is a country that has this, quote-unquote glorious past. Obviously, it's filled with tragedy and horror, but, it was this massive empire, and now it's a little country that, struggles in many ways. I mean, it is still a large economy in the European Union, but it is by no means anything like what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, but then at the same time, it's also a country that questions fundamentally institution. It questions religion. It's a part of the phraseology out there. In fact, a lot of the vulgarities that are said in Spain, you're like, why would you say that about the host in the Catholic Mass?
Mm-hmm.
They have these incredible, terrible curse words. In fact, Ernest Hemingway references that in For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Mm-hmm.
He says, there is no more beautiful and no more vile or vulgar a language than Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it can be so beautiful and romantic and poetic, but it can just be so vile and vulgar, and you can seriously experience that in Spain. But it truly is this fascinating culture that has bullfighting and, militant vegans. You know, it's like,
mm-hmm.
it's just this country of contradictions, and it's long been united by a certain identity, and then it hasn't been for the last probably at least 50 years, where there's the Basque territory, and there's the Catalonian territory, and there's the this territory and that territory, and they truly don't see themselves as Spaniards.
Mm-hmm.
They see themselves as, I'm Catalonian, I'm from the Basque region, and you have differences of language and food and culture. So it's just a fascinating thing, but you have this Muslim influence and in Spain that really kind of affects so much of world history. And so I'm going to be going to Cordoba, which is why I brought it up. So I'll be checking out the mosque and hanging out in the Jewish quarter and just kind of rereading that past.
I guess the thing that's inspiring me is, so we recently did, not too long ago, we talked on the podcast about Rachel Hale Evans. And after we did that podcast, I was thinking about how can I fold her books into worship at the church that I'm serving at Lower Brandywine. And we're doing these sermon series called Words to Live By. And I ended up with the word meekness. And that's not me. That is not a word that I am.
Mm.
And so I said, well, let me pick up her book and read through it and think about how she sort of experienced that idea of being humble and meek and being a female in religion and struggling with all of that. So we talked about that on the last podcast, and then we talked about her book on the last podcast or couple podcasts ago or whatever. Doesn't matter. But me being the smart person that I am, forgot to order the book in time. And, of course, Barnes & Noble is completely sold out of it, or a bookstore that will remain nameless, whatever we want to do. And so I kind of was asking around, like, hey, does anybody have a copy? Anybody have a copy? Well, Meredith, Edwin's wife, had a copy, and she let me borrow it, which was really cool, borrowing someone else's book. She didn't write in it. It was in good shape. I hopefully gave it back with not too much cat hair in it. But it was this really beautiful moment that I had as I was reading it, and thinking about how those words speak to different people at different times.
Mm.
She had talked on the podcast about how she had read it on y'all's honeymoon and really thinking about what it meant to be married to a pastor and to be living in that world and to finding her identity. And I had read it when I was kind of struggling with my sense of call and thinking about how hard did I want to fight to actually be ordained.
Mm.
But this time when I reread it, to read those words out of the same book that had gone everywhere y'all went that I'm sure she carried in her bag and pulled out in airports and this, that, and the other. But to have that physical thing, that physical connection, it was like this really beautiful sort of moment to think about how those words can meet us and speak to us in different ways and at different times in our lives. And it was one of those really profound moments, just thinking about that. And so that was a moment. That was a God kind of moment.
We actually, I did want to wait to the podcast to expose this fact, which is that we did find a lot of cat hair in the book.
Probably did.
Actually, there are a lot of hair balls, and I have them in a bag to return to you.
Oh, thanks.
But we're really upset.
I'll knit it into a scarf for you. Make a little cat hair scarf. Knit your initials into it.
Yeah. You know, the other thing I am inspired about is, I mean, this is going to totally be a plug, but I am excited about the Riverfront 505 service.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm inspired by my current ministry, and I'd have to be in order to be doing it, you know. It's really hard to do ministry long without inspiration, because there's got to be the glimpses of grace and beauty, justice, truth, or else it'd be like, I should find something else to do. So Riverfront 505 is exciting to me because we're going to hear a lot of different voices this summer. Noelle, who's, you know, you'll hear that podcast at some point we did with her about women in ministry and her faith journey. We're going to hear from Carlos Reyes Rodriguez, who he's preached with us before. We're going to hear from Mark Zimmerman, who works in the Congo. He's a missionary in the Congo. He'll be joining us and kind of answering questions about what he does in the Congo. And, you know, we've just got, you know, Nate Phillips coming from the Kirk. Obviously, Pastor Emma will be preaching. We've got Reverend Taran Smith, who's over at Arise in Wilmington. I mean, so we have just several guests, and that kind of goes back to the roots of what the 505 was. In the beginning, we had all these different guests, and it was really like a pop-up church. And since we started in 2015, it was a pop-up church. And then, you know, we shifted and we responded and we tried some different things, and, you know, we failed fast in many ways. You know, we tried this thing and it didn't work, and then we tried that other thing and that didn't work, and then there were some things that did work. But I realized, like, there are these wonderful church plants in Delaware and all of different cities, and I've met some of the people planting, and they're doing great work, and they're really interesting people, and I think it's important for a community to have those voices. But I also just felt like, you know what, Riverfront, what's wrong with planting a pop-up? You know, like, I thought about my own garden. You know, I've been doing a lot of gardening for the first time, really, this year. I've always helped take care of other people's gardens, and it's paid to do that, but I'm now doing it for free for myself. But I remember I was gardening, and my mom has a wonderful green thumb, and that whole side of the family, they're amazing gardeners. And she was just like, oh, let's just put these flowers in there. And I remember going like, whoa, like, you know, they're not perennials, they're annuals, which means they're just going to die, and then I'm going to have to replace them next year, and they also don't really go with the color scheme. And my mom just, like, invited me into creativity and was like, yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
They're just for this season to pop and be this pink, orange, yellow, whatever the flower was. They're just supposed to pop. And every time you see them, go, wow, that's amazing. And it's not supposed to fit into this system and make total sense, da-da-da-da-da-da. And that's, I felt inspired about Riverfront's 505 service as serving like that. Just let it pop, just for a moment in time, for a season that happens to be the summer season, every summer season. You know, let people walking the riverfront walk by. Let guests who are coming for the first time experience what we're trying to do up there. Let boat captains and Calmar Nickel passengers and riverboat parties, let them all hear that there is worship that is public, accessible, and meaningful and invitational happening at the 505 service. And that is what moves me. That fills me with joy. That inspires me. I've got to share with you guys, we had our first one on June 2nd. We had our very first 505 worship service of the summer. And we're going all the way through August. And then we're taking the last Sunday. We're joining the August quarterly, which is the longest running and oldest African-American quarterly meeting in the United States church, you know, kind of festival. We're going to be joining them, but until then, we'll be outdoors at 5:05 p.m. at the Hare Pavilion at the Riverfront. But I've got to tell you, on June 2nd, I had such a full day in the morning. You know, I serve Grace Church, and I serve at the pleasure of the United Methodist denomination, and with the blessing of Presbytery of Newcastle. And I was tired that whole week. There was just a lot to manage. There was a lot to manage personally. There was a lot to manage in terms of Grace Church. And there was a lot to manage in terms of our 5:05 service. And I was so tired. And I got to the service, and I had a wonderful time. First off, we had By Faith, who's just, he's going to be leading worship all summer long, and they were great. We had a wonderful turnout, but again, it was threatened storm, so we couldn't be outside. Right. So that was kind of a bummer. And, you know, I was just feeling a little down with some of the way things went, you know, just because I would have liked to have been outside and, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. But as I leave the service, I haven't even told you guys this, so you're hearing it for the first time. One of the people, there was a person who was there that wasn't necessarily even supposed to be there. And he came up to me and he was crying. And he just said, you know, I haven't been to church in a long time. Mm. And I heard what you guys were doing. And the way he ended up there is he was asked to be there to sort of help because we were in this venue inside and, you know, we had to be there. And he was just sort of there to see if we needed anything. And he's like, I wasn't supposed to be here, and here I am. And, you know, because of a storm, we went indoors. Mm-hmm. And because we went indoors, one person mm-hmm. who's never been to church before, and by church I mean like the gathered worship, you know, the gathered who are worshiping together.
Yeah.
He teared up and said, I love the sermon. I loved the music. I love the community. I love what you're trying to do. And thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And he took communion. And I mean, mm-hmm. it was just this whole thing. And I remember, this is why it's sorry, but I meant to tell you guys, because I was like, first off, Ken and, you know, Emma, you guys did a great job. And I'm so thankful to do this with you guys
mm-hmm.
because
thanks.
It's inspiring to me to just say for one moment there was one person who was incredibly moved
mm-hmm.
and experienced church in another way, because church is not the building.
Right.
That's what he thought he was saying.
Yeah.
But church is the gathered and sent out worshiping community of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that he got to experience that and that the Spirit spoke to him. He wasn't the only one. There were several others that I knew that, you know, they are connected to their faith. They are connected to perhaps to a church, you know, a community already. But they came up and said, I really needed this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we live stream it on our Riverfront Church Facebook page. So that's available at 5:05 p.m. on Sundays and people tune in. But I really think we're doing something funky, and
mm-hmm.
it's not flashy.
Right.
It's not meant to, we're not meant to go buy a building, at least I don't think so. And if the day ever comes where that has to happen, then, you know, let it happen, or maybe somebody else will be called to lead that effort. But
mm-hmm.
I truly feel that bearing witness to the love of God in Christ Jesus that we're doing through the Think and Drink Bible study, which is basically a anything goes Bible study. Ask any question you want. I mean, you'll...
Right.
If you don't ask it, trust me, the Bible study leader will, like, he'll go there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's so interactive, and we've just had a wonderful community form around that. I was just thinking about that the other day. And we continue the 5:05 outdoor service, and we'll have some other events and protests and rallies and community gatherings that we'll let you know about. We'll have some fundraisers coming up over the next year or so. But even, you know, doing this podcast, I mean, I just think we're doing something different for our community, and that doesn't mean it's better than any other church. That's not to say it's worse than any other church. It's just to say it's like another flower being planted in the garden, and it blooms for a season. And I'm thankful, inspired, and I see the beauty of that season. So that's what's inspiring.
Yeah. I guess one of the things that is sort of inspiring me, and this is not necessarily Riverfront related, but I guess it sort of is because I'm talking about it on our podcast. So I am also, my real life job is I'm a pastor at Lower Brandywine Presbyterian Church. Shout out, I love them. But anyway, so for a very long time, probably the past 7 or 8 or 9 years, I've been working in churches where I kind of had to only be myself up to a limit, you know, fit into the perfect little box of here is what you get to be and do as a pastor, and don't stretch too far out. So I'm a slightly ridiculous person. I don't know if y'all know that or not. But I've sort of recently given myself permission, because I'm in a church that is really loving and wonderful and willing to try things. And yes, I might get pushed back to say, okay, what would it mean to bring my whole self to worship and to worship planning and to bring the skills and gifts and kind of those ridiculous things? So I sat down with someone the other day, a member of our church, and I said, here's what I'm thinking. What is too far for Pentecost? Because Pentecost, at the time of recording, is the upcoming Sunday, and thinking like, okay, what if I do this? What if I do that? What if I do this? And finally coming, bringing it back a little bit to a place that is comfortable for the church, but just a little uncomfortable, yeah, but fun and enthusiastic, and getting to make little origami birds. Mm. And I've already ordered a flame-covered dress for next year to wear for Pentecost, but really giving myself permission to say, this church stuff that we do, this worship planning stuff that we do, God doesn't call us to fit into this perfect little Christian box. God says, bring who you are. And yes, you know, maybe I won't show up in my stormtrooper dress to my Sunday morning church. I might show up at Riverfront if we ever have a reason to.
Yes.
But, you know, that's been really liberating to me. And I guess it's either the first time or it's the first time in a very long time that I've said, okay, well, I have the ability, I have the energy, I have the joy, I have the desire to bring those things to worship and see what happens. And maybe they will crash and burn. People might hate it, and all the little origami birds that I folded may get thrown away. It's completely possible, but just giving myself permission to say, these church things, these scripture ideas, I can bring who I am to them and encounter them the way I encounter them and invite other people to do the same has been really liberating.
Thanks so much, Pastor Emma. I'm so glad that you've gathered us to talk about what inspires us.
Yes.
And how we've seen beauty and grace in our lives. And so to our listeners, I hope you take a moment to think about what inspires you, what has inspired you, what are the ways and where are the places and who are the people where you have glimpsed grace and beauty and God's love. And so take a moment to think about that, and feel free to make that the topic of conversation on your date night tonight, or you're meeting someone for the first time over coffee and you feel the butterflies, or you're just hanging out with some friends or family. You know, it's a great devotional question.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great thing to use in your life just to cultivate gratitude and a sense of joy for all that we have, all that we've been blessed with, and all that we are, and what we are to each other, and who we are to each other. And also, take a moment if you want to send us an email, or go on the Riverfront Church Facebook page and write us some comments. Mm-hmm. About, you know, what are the things that inspire you and bring joy, and, you know, where you see grace. And feel free, of course, to join us at 5:05 every Sunday at Hare Pavilion, 5:05 p.m., at the Hare Pavilion, and join us there through August. And we'll check you out later. See ya!
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Riverfront Church Podcast. You can connect with us online at riverfrontwilmo.com or on Facebook. Just search for Riverfront Church in Wilmington, Delaware. May God meet you where you are and lead you where you are meant to go.